and complacent. I had allowed the emperors of Rome, including one of my own descendants, to rise to power in the shadows. I had let my once great network of oracles collapse until even Delphi was lost. I had almost caused the death of Camp Half-Blood itself. And Meg McCaffrey. Oh, Meg, where were you? Do what you need to do, she had told me. That's my final order. Her order had been vague enough to allow me to pursue her. After all, we were bound together now. What I needed to do was to find her. I wondered if Meg had phrased her order that way on purpose, or if that was just wishful thinking on my part. I gazed up at the serene alabaster face of Athena. In real life, she didn't look so pale and aloof. Well, not most of the time, anyway. I pondered why the sculptor, Phidias, had chosen to make her look so unapproachable, and whether Athena approved. We gods often debated how much humans could change our very nature simply by the way they pictured us or imagined us. During the 18th century, for instance, I could not escape the white powdered wig, no matter how hard I tried. Among immortals, our reliance on humans was an uncomfortable subject. Perhaps I deserved my present form. After my carelessness and foolishness, perhaps humanity should see me as nothing but Lester Papadopoulos. I heaved a sigh. Athena, what would you do in my place? Something wise and practical, I suppose. Athena offered no response. She stared calmly at the horizon, taking the long view, as always. I didn't need the wisdom goddess to tell me what I must do. I should leave Camp Half-Blood immediately, before the campers woke. They had taken me in to protect me, and I had nearly gotten them all killed. I couldn't bear to endanger them any longer. But oh, how I wanted to stay with Will, Kayla, Austin, my mortal children. I wanted to help Harley put smiley faces on his flamethrower. I wanted to flirt with Kiara and steal her away from Damien. Or perhaps steal Damien away from Kiara. I wasn't sure yet. I wanted to improve my music and archery through that strange activity known as practice. I wanted to have a home. Leave, I told myself. Hurry. Because I was a coward, I waited too long. Below me, the cabin lights flickered on. Campers emerged from their doorways. Sherman Yang began his morning stretches. Harley jogged around the green, holding his Leo Valdez beacon high with the hope it would finally work. At last, a pair of familiar figures spotted me. They approached from different directions, the big house and cabin 3. Hiking up the hill to see me, Rachel Dare and Percy Jackson. I know what you're thinking, Rachel said. Don't do it. I feigned surprise. Can you read my mind, Miss Dare? I don't need to. I know you, Lord Apollo. A week ago, the idea would have made me laugh. A mortal could not know me. I had lived for 4 millennia. Merely looking upon my true form would have vaporized any human. Now, though, Rachel's words seemed perfectly reasonable. With Lester Papadopoulos, what you saw was what you got. There really wasn't much to know. Don't call me Lord, I sighed. I am just a mortal teen. I do not belong at this camp. Percy sat next to me. He squinted at the sunrise, the sea breeze tousling his hair. Yeah, I used to think I didn't belong here either. It's not the same, I said. You humans change and grow and mature. Gods do not. Percy faced me. You sure about that? You seem pretty different. I think he meant that as a compliment, but I didn't find his words reassuring. if I was becoming more fully human, that was hardly a cause for celebration. True, I had mustered a few godly powers at important moments, a burst of divine strength against the Germani, a hay-fever arrow against the Colossus, but I could not rely on those abilities. I didn't even understand how I had summoned them. The fact that I had limits, and that I couldn't be sure where those limits were, well, that made me feel much more like Lester Papadopoulos than Apollo. "The other oracles must be found and secured," I said. "I cannot do that unless I leave Camp Half-Blood, and I cannot risk anyone else's life." Rachel sat on my other side. "You sound certain. Did you get a prophecy from the Grove?" I shuddered. "I fear so." Rachel cupped her hands on her knees. "Kayla said you were talking to an arrow yesterday. I'm guessing it's wood from Dodona?" "Wait," Percy said. "You found a talking arrow that gave you a prophecy?" "Don't be silly," I said. "The arrow talks, but I got the prophecy from the Grove itself. The arrow of Dodona just gives random advice. He's quite annoying." The arrow buzzed in my quiver. "At any rate," I continued, "I must leave the camp. The triumvirate means to possess all the ancient oracles. I have to stop them. Once I have defeated the former emperors, only then will I be able to face my old enemy Python and free the Oracle of Delphi. After that, if I survive, perhaps Zeus will restore me to Olympus." Rachel tugged at a strand of her hair. "You know it's too dangerous to do all that alone, right?" "Listen to her," Percy urged. "Chiron told me about Nero and this weird holding company of his." "I appreciate the offer of assistance, but..." "Whoa!" Percy held up his hands. "Just to be clear, I'm not offering to go with you. I still have to finish my senior year, pass my D-stomp and my SAT, and avoid getting killed by my girlfriend. But I'm sure we can get you some other helpers." "I'll go," Rachel said. I shook my head. My enemies would love to capture someone as dear to me as the Priestess of Delphi. Besides, I need you and Miranda Gardner to stay here and study the Grove of Dodona. For now, it is our only source of prophecy. And since our communication problems have not gone away, learning to use the Grove's power is all the more critical. Rachel tried to hide it, but I could see her disappointment in the lines around her mouth. "What about Meg?" she asked. "You'll try to find her, won't you?" She might as well have plunged the arrow of Dodona into my chest. I gazed at the woods, at hazy green expanse that had swallowed young McCaffrey. For a brief moment, I felt like Nero. I wanted to burn the whole place down. "I will try," I said. "But Meg doesn't want to be found. She's under the influence of her stepfather." Percy traced his finger across the Athena Parthenos's big toe. "I've lost too many people to bad influence. Ethan Nakamura. Luke Castellan. We almost lost Nico, too." He shook his head. "No. No more. You can't give up on Meg. You guys are bound together. Besides, she's one of the good guys." "I've known many of the good guys," I said. "Most of them got turned into beasts, or statues, or trees." My voice broke. Rachel put her hand over mine. "Things can turn out differently, Apollo. That's the nice thing about being human. We only have one life, but we can choose what kind of story it's going to be." That seemed hopelessly optimistic. I had spent too many centuries watching the same patterns of behavior be repeated over and over. All by humans who thought they were being terribly clever and doing something that had never been done before. They thought they were crafting their own stories. But they were only tracing over the same old narratives, generation after generation. Still, perhaps human persistence was an asset. They never seemed to give up hope. Every so often, they did manage to surprise me. I never anticipated Alexander the Great, Robin Hood, or Billie Holiday. For that matter, I never anticipated Percy Jackson and Rachel Elizabeth Dare. I hope you're right, I said. She patted my hand. Tell me the prophecy you heard in the grove. I took a shaky breath. I didn't want to speak the words. I was afraid they might wake the grove and drown us in a cacophony of prophecies, bad jokes, and infomercials. But I recited the lines. There once was a god named Apollo, who plunged in a cave blue and hollow. Upon a three-seater, the bronze fire-eater was forced death and madness to swallow. Rachel covered her mouth. A limerick? I know, I wailed. I'm doomed. Wait. Percy's eyes glittered. Those lines. Do they mean what I think? Well, I said, I believe the Blue Cave refers to the Oracle of Trophonius. It was a very dangerous ancient oracle. No, Percy said. The other lines. Three-seater, bronze fire-eater, yada yada. Oh, I have no clue about those. Harley's beacon, Percy laughed, though I could not understand why he was so pleased. He said you gave it a tuning adjustment? I guess that did the trick. Rachel squinted at him. Percy, what are you... Her expression went slack. Oh. Oh! Were there any other lines? Percy urged. Like, except for the limerick. Several, I admitted. Just bits and pieces I didn't understand. The fall of the sun, the final verse. Indiana banana. Happiness approaches. Something about pages burning. Percy slapped his knee. There you go. Happiness approaches. Happy is a name, well, the English version, anyway. He stood and scanned the horizon, his eyes fixed on something in the distance. A grin spread across his face. Yep. Apollo, your escort is on the way. I followed his gaze. Spiraling down from the clouds was a large winged creature that glinted of celestial bronze. On its back were two human-sized figures. Their descent was silent, but in my mind a joyous fanfare of Valdezonator music proclaimed the good news. Leo had returned. Chapter 39. Want to hit Leo? That is understandable. Hunkmuffin earned it. The demigods had to take numbers. Nico commandeered a dispenser from the snack bar and carried it around, yelling, The line starts to the left. Orderly queue, guys. Is this really necessary? Leo asked. Yes, said Miranda Gardner, who had drawn the first number. She punched Leo in the arm. Ow, said Leo. You're a jerk, and we all hate you, said Miranda. Then she hugged him and kissed his cheek. If you ever disappear like that again, we'll line up to kill you. Okay, okay. Miranda had to move on because the line was getting pretty long behind her. Percy and I sat at the picnic table with Leo and his companion, none other than the immortal sorceress Calypso. Even though Leo was the one getting punched by everyone in camp, I was reasonably sure he was the least uncomfortable one at the table. When they first saw each other, Percy and Calypso had hugged awkwardly. I hadn't witnessed such a tense greeting since Patroclus met Achilles' war prize, Briseis. Long story, juicy gossip. Ask me later. Calypso had never liked me, so she pointedly ignored me. But I kept waiting for her to yell, "Boo!" and turn me into a tree frog. The suspense was killing me. Percy hugged Leo, and didn't even punch him. Still, the son of Poseidon looked disgruntled. "I can't believe it," he said. "6 months."
"I told you," Leo said. "We tried sending more holographic scrolls. We tried iris messages, dream visions, phone calls. Nothing worked.
Ow!"
"Hey, Alice. How you doing?"
Anyway, we ran into one crisis after another. Calypso nodded. Albania was particularly difficult. From down the line, Nico D'Angelo yelled,
"Please do not mention Albania. Okay, who's next, folks? One line."
Damian White punched Leo's arm and walked away grinning. I wasn't sure Damian even knew Leo. He simply couldn't turn down a chance to punch someone. Leo rubbed his bicep.
"Hey, no fair. That guy's getting back in the line." "So, like I was saying, if Festus hadn't picked up on that homing beacon yesterday, we'd still be flying around, looking for a way out of the Sea of Monsters."
"Oh, I hate that place," Percy said. "There's this big cyclops, Polyphemus."
"I know, right?" Leo agreed. "What is up with that guy's breath?"
"Boys," Calypso said, "perhaps we should focus on the present." She did not look at me, but I got the impression she meant this silly former god and his problems.
"Yeah," Percy said. "So, the communication issues. Rachel Dare thinks it's got something to do with this company, Triumvirate."
Rachel herself had gone to the big house to fetch Chiron, but Percy did a reasonable job summarizing what she had found out about the Emperors and their evil corporation. Of course, we didn't know very much. By the time 6 more people had punched Leo in the arm, Percy had brought Leo and Calypso up to speed. Leo rubbed his new bruises.
"Man, why does it not surprise me that modern corporations are run by zombie Roman emperors?"
"They are not zombies," I said. "And I'm not sure they run all corporations." Leo waved away my explanation.
"But they're trying to take over the oracles."
"Yes," I agreed.
"And that's bad."
"Very."
"So, you need our help."
"Ow!"
"Hey, Sherman. Where'd you get the new scar, dude?"
While Sherman told Leo the story of Crotch Kicker McCaffrey and the Demon Peach Baby, I glanced at Calypso. She looked very different from what I remembered. Her hair was still long and caramel brown. Her almond-shaped eyes were still dark and intelligent. But now, instead of a chitin, she wore modern jeans, a white blouse, and a shocking pink ski jacket. She looked younger, about my mortal age. I wondered if she had been punished with mortality for leaving her enchanted island. If so, it didn't seem fair that she had retained her otherworldly beauty. She had neither flab nor acne. As I watched, she stretched 2 fingers toward the opposite end of the picnic table, where a pitcher of lemonade sweated in the sunlight. I had seen her do this sort of thing before, willing her invisible aerial servants to whisk objects into her hands. This time, nothing happened. A look of disappointment crossed her face. Then she realized I was watching. Her cheeks colored.
"Since leaving Ogygia, I have no powers," she admitted. "I am fully mortal. I keep hoping, but..."
"You want a drink?" Percy asked.
"I got it."
Leo beat him to the pitcher. I had not expected to feel sympathy for Calypso. We'd had harsh words in the past. A few millennia ago, I had opposed her petition for early release from Ogygia because of some, drama between us. Long story, juicy gossip. Please do not ask me later. Still, as a fallen god, I understood how disconcerting it was to be without one's powers. On the other hand, I was relieved. This meant she could not turn me into a tree frog, or order her aerial servants to toss me off the Athena Parthenos.
Here you go.
Leo handed her a glass of lemonade. His expression seemed darker and more anxious, as if...
Ah, of course. Leo had rescued Calypso from her prison island. In doing so, Calypso had lost her powers. Leo felt responsible.
Calypso smiled, though her eyes were still touched by melancholy.
Thank you, babe.
Babe? Percy asked.
Leo's expression brightened.
Yeah, she won't call me Hunk Muffin, though.
I don't know why.
Ow!
It was Harley's turn. The little boy punched Leo, then threw his arms around him and broke down sobbing.
Hey, brother.
Leo ruffled his hair and had the good sense to look ashamed.
You brought me home with that beacon of yours, H. Meister. You're a hero.
You know I never would have left you hanging like that on purpose, don't you?
Harley wailed and sniffled and nodded. Then he punched Leo again and ran away. Leo looked like he was about to get sick. Harley was quite strong.
At any rate, Calypso said, these problems with the Roman emperors. How can we help?
I raised my eyebrows.
You will help me then? Despite, well,
I always knew you were kind-hearted and forgiving, Calypso. I meant to visit you at Aegygia more often.
Spare me. Calypso sipped her lemonade. I'll help you if Leo decides to help you, and he seems to have some affection for you.
Why, I can't imagine. I let go of the breath I had been holding for, an hour.
I'm grateful.
Leo Valdez, you have always been a gentleman and a genius. After all, you created the Valdezinator. Leo grinned.
I did, didn't I?
I suppose that was pretty awesome. So where is this next oracle, you...
Ow!
Nyssa had made it to the front of the line. She slapped Leo, then berated him in rapid Spanish.
Yeah, okay.
Leo rubbed his face.
Dang, Romana!
I love you too. He turned his attention back to me.
So this next oracle, you said it was where?
Percy tapped the picnic table. Chiron and I were talking about this. He figures this triumvirate thingy, they probably divided America into three parts, with one emperor in charge of each. We know Nero is holed up in New York, so we're guessing this next oracle is in the second dude's territory. Maybe in the middle third of the U.S.?
Oh, the middle third of the U.S.
Leo spread his arms.
Piece of torta, then. We'll just search the entire middle of the country.
Still with the sarcasm, Percy noted.
Hey, man, I've sailed with the most sarcastic scalawags on the high seas.
The two gave each other a high five.
I did not quite understand why.
I thought about a snippet of prophecy I'd heard in the Grove, something about Indiana.
It might be a place to start.
The last person to come through the line was Chiron himself, pushed in his wheelchair by Rachel Dare. The old centaur gave Leo a warm, fatherly smile.
My boy, I am so pleased to have you back. And you freed Calypso, I see. Well done, and welcome, both of you.
Chiron spread his arms for a hug.
Thanks, Chiron.
Leo leaned forward. From underneath Chiron's lap blanket, his equine foreleg shot out and implanted a hoof in Leo's gut. Then just as quickly, the leg disappeared.
Mr. Valdez,
Chiron said in the same kindly tone.
If you ever pull a stunt like that again.
I got it.
Leo rubbed his stomach.
Dang, for a teacher, you got a heck of a high kick.
Rachel grinned and wheeled Chiron away. Calypso and Percy helped Leo to his feet.
Yo, Nico! Leo called. Please tell me that's it for the physical abuse.
For now, Nico smiled. We're still trying to get in touch with the West Coast.
You'll have a few dozen people out there who will definitely want to hit you.
Leo winced.
Yeah, that's something to look forward to. Well, I guess I'd better keep my strength up. Where do you guys eat lunch now that the Colossus stepped on the dining pavilion?
Percy left that night just before dinner. I expected a moving one-on-one farewell, during which he would ask my advice about test-taking, being a hero, and living life in general. After he lent me his help in defeating the Colossus, it would have been the least I could do. Instead, he seemed more interested in saying goodbye to Leo and Calypso. I wasn't part of their conversation, but the three of them seemed to reach some sort of mutual understanding. Percy and Leo embraced. Calypso even pecked Percy on the cheek.
Then the son of Poseidon waded into Long Island Sound, with his extremely large dog, and they both disappeared underwater.
Did Mrs. O'Leary swim?
Did she travel through the shadows of whales?
I did not know.
Like lunch, dinner was a casual affair. As darkness fell, we ate on picnic blankets around the hearth, which blazed with Hestia's warmth and kept away the winter chill. Festus the dragon sniffed around the perimeter of the cabins, occasionally blowing fire into the sky for no apparent reason.
He got a little dinged up in Corsica, Leo explained. Sometimes he spews randomly like that.
He hasn't blowtorched anyone important yet, Calypso added, her eyebrow arched.
We'll see how he likes you.
Festus's red jewel eyes gleamed in the darkness. After driving the sun chariot for so long, I wasn't nervous about riding a metal dragon. But when I thought about what we'd be riding toward, geraniums bloomed in my stomach.
I had planned to go alone, I told them. The prophecy from Dodona speaks of the bronze fire eater, but it feels wrong for me to ask you to risk your lives. You have been through so much just to get here.
Calypso tilted her head.
Perhaps you have changed.
That does not sound like the Apollo I remember. You definitely are not as handsome.
I am still quite handsome, I protested. I just need to clear up this acne.
She smirked. So you haven't completely lost your big head?
I beg your pardon?
Guys, Leo interrupted, if we're going to travel together, let's try to keep it friendly.
He pressed an ice pack to his bruised bicep.
Besides, we were planning to head west anyway. I gotta find my peeps Jason and Piper and Frank and Hazel and, well, pretty much everybody at Camp Jupiter, I guess. It'll be fun.
Fun? I asked. The Oracle of Trophonius will supposedly swallow me in death and madness. Even if I survive that, my other trials will no doubt be long, harrowing, and quite possibly fatal.
Exactly, Leah said. Fun. I don't know about calling the whole quest thing Apollo's trials, though. I think we should call it Leo Valdez's Victory Lap World Tour.
Calypso laughed and laced her fingers in Leo's. She may not have been immortal anymore, but she still had a grace and easiness about her that I could not fathom. Perhaps she missed her powers, but she seemed genuinely happy to be with Valdez, to be young and mortal, even if it meant she could die at any moment. Unlike me, she had chosen to become mortal. She knew that leaving Ogygia was a risk, but she had done it willingly. I didn't know how she'd found the courage.
Hey, man, Leo told me.
Don't look so glum.
We'll find her. I stirred.
What?
Your friend, Meg.
We'll find her. Don't worry.
A bubble of darkness burst inside me. For once, I hadn't been thinking of Meg. I'd been thinking about myself, and that made me feel guilty.
Perhaps Calypso was right to question whether or not I'd changed. I gazed at the silent forest. I remembered Meg dragging me to safety when I was cold and soaked and delirious. I remembered how fearlessly she fought the Myrmecas, and how she'd ordered Peaches to extinguish the match when Nero wanted to burn his hostages,
despite her fear of unleashing the beast. I had to make her realize how evil Nero was. I had to find her. But how? Meg knows the prophecy, I said. If she tells Nero, he will know our plans as well. Calypso took a bite of her apple. I missed the whole Roman Empire. How bad can one emperor be? Bad, I assured her. And he is allied with two others. We don't know which ones, but it's safe to assume they are equally cutthroat. They've had centuries to amass fortunes, acquire property, build armies. Who knows what they are capable of?
Eh, Leo said. We took down Gia in, like, 40 seconds. This will be easy squeezy.
I seem to recall that the lead-up to the fight with Gia had involved months of suffering and near misses with death. Leo, in fact, had died. I also wanted to remind him that the Triumvirate might well have orchestrated all our previous troubles with the Titans and Giants, which would make them more powerful than anything Leo had ever faced. I decided that mentioning these things might affect group morale.
We'll succeed, Calypso said. We must.
So we will. I have been trapped on an island for thousands of years. I don't know how long this mortal life will be, but I intend to live fully and without fear.
That's my mamacita, Leo said.
What have I told you about calling me mamacita?
Leo grinned sheepishly. In the morning, we'll start getting our supplies together. As soon as Festus gets a tune-up and an oil change, we'll be good to go. I considered what supplies I would take with me. I had depressingly little. Some borrowed clothes, a bow, a ukulele, and an overly theatrical arrow. But the real difficulty would be saying goodbye to Will, Austin, and Kayla. They had helped me so much, and they embraced me as family more than I had ever embraced them. Tears stung my eyes. Before I could start sobbing, Will Solace stepped into the light of the hearth.
Hey, everybody. We started a bonfire in the amphitheater. Sing along time. Come on.
Groans were mixed in with the cheers, but most everyone got to their feet and ambled toward the bonfire, now blazing in the distance, where Nico D'Angelo stood silhouetted in the flames, preparing rows of marshmallows on what looked like femur bones.
Aw, man, Leo winced. I'm terrible at sing-alongs. I always clap and do the old McDonald's sounds at the wrong time.
Can we skip this?
Oh, no. I rose to my feet, suddenly feeling better. Perhaps tomorrow I would weep and think about goodbyes. Perhaps the day after that we would be flying toward our deaths. But tonight, I intended to enjoy my time with my family.
What had Calypso said?
Live fully and without fear.
If she could do it, then so could the brilliant, fabulous Apollo. Singing is good for the spirits. You should never miss an opportunity to sing.
Calypso smiled. I can't believe I'm saying this, but for once I agree with Apollo.
Come on, Leo. I'll teach you to harmonize.
Together, the three of us walked toward the sounds of laughter, music, and a warm, crackling fire.
This is Robbie Damon. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Trials of Apollo, The Hidden Oracle, by Rick Riordan. This program was directed by Christina Rooney, executive producer Janet Stark. Text copyright 2016 by Rick Riordan. Production copyright 2016, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.